Astronomerica presents a spacewalk among the stars. Globular star clusters M13 and M92 in the constellation Hercules are the targets for tonight. Hercules is a spring and summer constellation for the northern hemisphere. Globular clusters are very old associations of stars that all formed around the same time. We're talking really old, ancient, on the order of about 12 billion years old in many cases. This is in a universe that we currently believe to be not much older than that, about 13.7 billion years old. In fact, for a while there, astronomers were perplexed because it was looking like globulars were older than the universe itself, a problem that has since been resolved, but created some serious consternation in the astronomical community for a while there. There are more than 150 known globular clusters orbiting about the halo of our own Milky Way galaxy, and estimates indicate there are probably about 30 to 40 more yet undiscovered. In 1714, Sir Edmund Halley, famous for Halley's Comet, discovered a little patch along one edge of the Keystone asterism in Hercules, just visible to the naked eye in a moonless sky. He had discovered one of the greatest globular clusters in the night sky, which was later catalogued by Charles Messier as number 13 in his list of bright objects, now known as the Messier Catalogue. Messier described it as a nebula which I am sure contains no star. How wrong he was. The cluster probably contains 500,000 or more stars. Messier's mistaken impression notwithstanding, it's now known to astronomers by his designation, M13, or simply as the Hercules Cluster. M13 is such a bright globular cluster that it's easiest just to look for it in the finder scope. If you haven't lined up your finder scope yet, you can do so now. Just pause the recording. If you're using a Telrad or a 1-power finder, you can point in the proper direction and use the lowest power, widest field eyepiece that you have to scan around for it. You won't miss it. We'll need to find the Keystone of Hercules first. This is an asterism of four stars forming a rectangle with one end narrower than the other. To find the Keystone, find the bright stars Vega and Arcturus. The Keystone is about a third of the way from Vega to Arcturus. Another asterism that lies between these two stars is the crown of Corona Borealis, which is a U-shaped necklace of stars, about three-fifths of the way from Vega to Arcturus. The open part of the necklace is to the north. Anyway, we're interested in the Keystone for now. One of the long sides is on the east, and one is on the west. We want the western side. That is the one that leads the Keystone across the sky as the Earth turns. So it's the upper long side when it's rising, and the lower long side when it's setting. Remember that in the telescope, everything drifts to the west. And it's the same in the sky with the unaided eye. So the leading side is the west side. You'll sometimes read telescopic observing descriptions, especially older ones, referring to preceding and following. This is the same concept. Preceding is toward the west, and following is toward the east. So north preceding, or NP, would be northwest. South following, or SF, would be southeast, etc. You'll see those abbreviations in any descriptions provided by John Dreyer, who compiled the NGC and IC catalogs and used these and other abbreviations in his descriptions of the cataloged objects. The western long side of the Keystone runs almost exactly north and south from the 3.5 magnitude star Eta Hercules, also known as 44 Hercules, at the north end, and 2.8 magnitude Zeta Hercules, or 40 Hercules, on the south end. M13 is a third of the way from Eta on the north to Zeta on the south, almost on a line between them, Pause here if you need to find it. Once you've got the location, we need to know exactly what we're looking for. Is it a star? Is it a fuzzy spot? We'll look for kind of a fuzzy ball that you can tell is not a star. It won't be that sharp pinpoint that the other stars show. This will be the only object of its kind along this line between the two stars. When you think you have it, switch to the eyepiece using lower power to sweep it up. Center it, focus on the brighter field stars, and enjoy the view. I recommend gradually increasing power, as it'll just get better and better as more stars resolve, until you hit the limits of atmospheric seeing. You'll know you've hit that point when the stars start to get less sharp, and you lose that sense of sparkling diamonds or grains of glowing sand. With somewhere near 500,000 or more stars, the cluster is awesome in just about any telescope. In 1931, 30,000 stars were counted in the cluster from a photograph taken with the 100-inch Hooker reflector at Mount Wilson Observatory. Talk about a tedious job. Can you imagine that? Oops, was that 28,746 or 29,746? Incredible how tightly packed the stars appear. Looks as if they're touching. But there's still plenty of space between them. The cluster is estimated to be about 21 to 25,000 light years away, depending on what source you quote, and spans a space of about 150 or so light years from one side to the other. Still, the core of a globular cluster can be about 1,000 to 1,000,000 times denser than the star density in our own neighborhood. What would it be like to live on a planet around a star near the core of this cluster? Pretty dazzling. There would be many more brighter stars than what we see in our sky. A lot more that are as bright as stars like Sirius, Canopus, Vega, or Arcturus, and the night sky would be washed out by all the bright stars. Kinda like where I live near the city, only it's the lights, not the stars, doing the washing out. More of us would likely be double or variable star observers than deep sky gourmets in such a place. The nearby core might even be visible in daylight. This is conjecture, of course, and you'll find different sources paint somewhat different pictures. A lot would depend on how far from the core your planet is, but globular clusters are probably not good places for planets to form and remain stable due to the gravitational pulls and motions of all the surrounding stars anyway, though that doesn't preclude them from existing. Well, there's a peculiar feature in M13 that I don't believe is comparable to anything else in the sky. Maybe you've picked it out. It's called the propeller, and it looks exactly like the name implies. You might be able to spot it in the eastern half of the cluster. There are three thin, dark, straight lanes hidden among the stars in the cluster that form an exactly symmetrical propeller shape, uncanny in its symmetry. Depending on the size of your telescope and power you're using, it may stand out strikingly or be totally undetectable. It's kind of like those 3D pictures that you have to look at for a while to see the hidden image. Illusion or not, when you do see it, it's kind of like, oh wow, that's pretty cool. Pause the recording here to see if you can spot the propeller, or just to take in the beauty of this fantastic and awesome object. If we're ready to move on, NGC 6207 is a 12.2 magnitude galaxy nearby, and it's worth a look, being as it's so close. It's 27.5 arc minutes away, which is almost half a degree from M13, in position angle 037. Remember that west is the direction toward which objects drift in the telescope with tracking turned off. A position angle of 037 is 127 degrees counterclockwise from west in a non-mirror reversing telescope. NGC 6207 forms a triangle with M13 and a 6.9 magnitude star that's 16.5 arc minutes to the east-northeast of M13. That's position angle 080 toward that star. The star is equidistant between M13 and NGC 6207 and to the southeast of a line between the two. I can put M13 and NGC 6207 on opposite edges of my 50 power field of view in my 10-inch. The galaxy appears to have a tiny stellar core. You can use higher power on it and perhaps discern its orientation. Pause the recording to adjust to this faint object and pull out as much detail as possible. The galaxy has a north-northeast to south-southwest orientation. By the way, you can view a Sloan Digital Sky Survey image of NGC 6207 on the Astronomerica website for clarification of what you see. Sometimes it's hard to keep tracking a dim object in high power if you don't have a tracking motor. Look at the star patterns to the east and west of the field which contains the object. In this case, there's a pair of stars on a diagonal just to the east, and a dimmer pair in similar orientation even closer. Pay attention to the patterns, so that if you let it drift, for example if you take a break but want to go back to the object without having to relocate it from the beginning, you can move the field slowly westward and find your way back. Like anywhere else you go, know the neighborhood so you don't get lost. If no stars are easily visible in the field, it's very difficult to keep tracking on the object by hand. The higher the power, the more you'll have to rely on averted vision, and the more difficult it becomes. It's a trade-off between image scale and brightness. But if you do lose the object, don't panic and start making big sweeps around the area. Most of the time, you won't find it again in high power. Instead, put a low-power eyepiece back in and see if you can't reorient yourself. If you're done with NGC 6207 for now, we'll move on to another globular cluster. Otherwise, you can pause the recording and take your time. We'll take a leap over to M92 rather than walking there in the eyepiece, as it's a good 9.5 degrees to the northeast of M13. It forms an isosceles triangle with Eta at the apex, and M92 and 3.2 magnitude Pi Herculis as the vertices in the base. Use the same technique you used to find M13. The two stars, Eta and Pi, mark the wider end of the keystone, facing toward Polaris in the north. M92 won't be as easy to identify as a globular in the finder because it has a more concentrated core than M13, and therefore appears more star-like in very low powers. But careful observation can pick it out from the surrounding stars. Pause here if you need a little time to find it. So how does M92 compare to M13 in your scope? Consider its size, shape, concentration, and degree of resolution. And by resolution, we mean whether or not you can see individual stars as distinct points and not just as a glowing haze. Can you resolve the core? Seeing must be very good to pick out the individual stars in its dense core. I've always felt you have to use a different kind of vision on globulars that are just on the edge of resolution. It's as if you're trying to look through space, almost beyond the cluster, letting the stars pop out as tiny grains of glowing sand or dust in your averted vision when your eye relaxes just at the right plane of focus. Similar to those 3D hidden images, actually. Experiment for a while. To me, M92 looks a little bit elongated north and south, and there's a line of about 4 stars on the eastern edge running north-south that stand out as a peculiar feature, though not as striking as the propeller in M13. The north end of the core seems a little more concentrated or brighter to me. How about for you? Anything else you notice? Does the same power work best for both globulars? what power works best on your scope for these two. Make a few notes. You might find these look different on another night with different sky conditions, or with more sleep, perhaps. M92 is slightly further away than M13, at about 26,000 or so light years. Pause the recording if you'd like to take a little bit of a longer look. Well, our journey tonight was composed of one small step and one giant leap, to paraphrase the first Moonwalker, but we've seen two simply amazing globular clusters. For many recreational astronomers, globular clusters are their favorite objects, each having its own unique personality, and rarely disappointing the observer, even in smaller telescopes. I'm sure you'll be visiting these two many more times. They provide a nice point of comparison to some of the other premier globulars in the sky. And did I mention Omega Centauri, the largest globular in our galaxy? Well, I'll leave that one up to my more southerly friends to point out to you. That's one everyone should see at least once in a lifetime. But now you're off on your own to seek some other targets. Enjoy the night.